Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 4 of It All Began With Friends. I'm Jay, your host, and today I'm actually by myself, but not for long, as today I'm going to talk live to our very own It All Began With Friends member, Lindsay, who you all might remember from episode 1, where she told us she was going to India. Well, she's there now. She's been there for nearly a month, studying to become a qualified yoga teacher. And she became qualified yesterday, I think it was. It's very, very exciting. And we can't wait to congratulate her on the news. We also have some questions to ask Lindsay about how it's been living as a vegan in India. What has she found out about their beliefs, the sacred cows, her practices, including being alcohol-free for a whole month, and what her favourite meals have been, which I'm sure they've all been amazing. I'm sure she has many recipes that she'll recommend to us. So let's give her a call. Let the dial tone begin. Isn't it amazing that we can just call somebody over in India now? Oh, it's ringing.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Yay!
Yeah.
How is London?
It's fine. It's actually really sunny here.
It's nice to hear your voice,
my lovely. And you. Oh, where are you?
I'm in a little cafe. It's called Little Buddha. It's overlooking the Ganges. It's very lovely.
Oh, is the music coming from you?
Well, yes, it's very loud.
Cool. Oh, no, it's
no,
cool.
It gives... just the ambient sounds of Rishikesh. They always have good music here, so at least I figured, like, if we're going to have something in the background, it'll be good quality background music.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, how's it all been going?
It has been crazy. I cannot believe how quickly a month has flown by.
Has it been everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, it really has. In some unexpected ways, but in some, like, really awesome ways as well. Like, life doesn't have to be this, like, crazy rat race of, like,
yeah,
you know, running around, making money, doing work. Like, it's just, I think the priorities over here are just a little bit shifted, and it's not London, you know?
Yeah.
It's so good to get that perspective every now and again. I've met so many people just traveling who are like, oh yeah, I've been on the road for like 2 or 3 years now. And like, if you need to stop and make money, you can stop and make money. You work at a hostel, you work in a bar for a bit, teach English, and then you pick back up again. And it's like, that's possible. We don't have to be like digging holes for ourselves in jobs that we don't like or doing things that we don't want to be doing. I'm like, oh, very empowering. Not that London doesn't like squelch it out of me.
Where have you been staying?
So we've been staying at City Yoga, where we did our training, and it was all kind of like a one-stop shop, so the kitchen and our rooms are all kind of in this one little hotel complex. And as part of the course, as part of the training, we got 3 catered for meals a day, which was so nice. So we start off in the morning with like a sort of standard breakfast fare, which would be something like you get in sort of North American cuisine, like bread, toast, peanut butter, fresh fruits, and a salad chai to set us off, 2 vegan meals a day. All the stuff they prepared was accessible for me, which was just so cool.
Yeah.
I didn't have to think about it. You know, you'd show up and it would be like everything on this spread, and it was a massive spread, you could eat, and that's, you know, a rarity.
Yeah.
So I've been staying in Rishikesh, which is, I think I mentioned in the first podcast, it's entirely, well, in loose air quotes, it's entirely dry. And it's meat-free as well.
Wow.
And I think, I'm not sure whether it's due to the population living here and the sort of the holiness in the Ganges and the location, or if it's the large tourist population, many of whom are doing yoga over here.
Yeah.
So I think one of the guys at our hotel said that there were over 250 teacher training yoga schools in this small little area of Rishikesh. And so it attracts a clientele or a type of tourist that tends to be of the at least vegetarian or vegan persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least people know what they're getting into when they come here. So no one's coming here expecting, you know, steaks.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice. We haven't been dining out a whole lot, but on weekends and stuff we would do. I'm sitting at a lovely cafe right now called Little Buddha, and it's overlooking the Ganges.
The atmosphere sounds really nice.
Yeah, they've always got great tunes here. Yeah, what time is it now? 3:48 p.m. and they've got like a nice little DJ set going. Sort of a haven spot, people just chilling, using the Wi-Fi.
Oh.
Like myself. Really, like in terms of finding stuff around here, it has not been a challenge. It's part of the shorthand, really. I think, is like people expect you to ask. There's loads of little like German bakeries for some reason are quite common over here.
Oh.
A lot of them offer, like, you know, vegan pain au chocolat, and we've had some amazing vegan carrot and ginger cakes and vegan banana cakes, and it's, yeah, I just think it's part of the sort of the cultural language over here.
Wow, I didn't expect you to, I didn't expect you to get all that.
Me neither. I think Delhi was a bit of a different story. I flew into Delhi from London, and Delhi was a bit, just because we were wandering through, and I was the group of people that definitely did eat meat. I think a lot of people who travel will probably have felt sort of the burden of the traveler being like, you don't want to be the one that says, no, we can't eat here.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're not going to bend or waver on your kind of, your values and morals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was a little bit trickier over there, just wandering through certain neighborhoods. A lot of stuff was street food, and ghee. And I think I may have mentioned ghee before, but it's a sort of a butter product, and it's very common just for frying things in, and it's deemed as sort of a health product over here. And it's just, you just don't know what's in something, and that's, you know, never a fun feeling.
Yeah.
But Rishikesh has been the polar opposite of that, and just easy sailing. I think I expected more culture shock than I actually got. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Like,
yeah.
It's something that I've like been talking to other travelers about. It's something that I haven't fully wrapped my head around. But in terms of like, let's say I showed up to this place and it was much more, I guess, like rural or villagey than what I've shown up to. And maybe something like veganism hadn't made its way into sort of popular mindset. And if the sort of this ghee product was being widely used for pretty much every meal, how do you feel like refusing things from people, and how do you go about, you know, talking to the lovely family who invited you into their home and saying, no, I don't want that? Do you know what I mean? For me to come in as like a sort of the Western traveler who has been so privileged to be able to come and explore other cultures, other tourists, you know,
yeah.
What that really means is just like that's so crazy to have that privilege, right? And then to come in and go, no, cater to my taste, my beliefs.
I think it's a really difficult one, isn't it? Because you don't want to be rude.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you don't want to come across like this Westerner that everything revolves around us. I think in those moments, I think we have to just remember that being a vegan isn't about us. It's not about people. It's about the animals. So we have to put our worries about what other 100%. People might think about us, and remember that we're not eating meat and dairy products to make a point to other people. It's because we don't want to harm animals, and that in itself, I guess, is a
That's so important. Is
the most important thing. Yeah, more than offending someone, even though we never want to offend anybody else.
Yeah, it's just so interesting, like the reverence for an animal in one respect, like, but then the dairy being so integral in the eating over here. I think they see it as like an offering of the sacred cow to you, but then did we ever ask for that, you know?
Yeah. They seem different in regards to their well-being. If so, do you think their diet is a major factor in that, or do you think other things come into it?
This is the thing, because being largely in Rishikesh, I see a lot of people who are you know, pursuing yoga at a high level, and the people that live here and people that ultimately work in that kind of sphere. So people seem like very vibrant and very like full of life around here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to actually say what factor is contributing to it most. I think probably one of those things where it all kind of compounds itself.
Yeah.
You know, like I think feeling good because you probably are eating more, you know, a whole food based diet. You're not having any meat, not having as much dairy, no eggs, there's no alcohol, so that sort of hangover thing isn't really existent.
We wanted to ask you how you feel about having no alcohol.
Man, it's been actually very easy. I think also because of the schedule. Our schedules, I don't think I mentioned before, it was like 12-hour days for the most part, and then we'd be doing some reviewing or lesson prep outside of those hours as well. So really long, intensive days, and I think even, you know, a couple of beers at the end of it would just put you under real fast.
Yeah.
So as far as, like, being on the course and doing it wasn't even a concern. And I don't know, you just kind of forget what it feels like to wake up so, like, actually refreshed and, like, waking up before alarm clocks and all that. It's like,
yeah.
This is how life could be.
Yeah.
I think culture and the people that you surround yourself with dictate so heavily what you deem as being acceptable. Like, if you're in a culture that, like, say, is eating meat, or if you're, like, drinking every night excessively, but that's just kind of what everyone else is doing, you don't question it. But if you're the outlier, then that's when it becomes quite apparent and quite stark.
To be in India and nobody else doing it doesn't really put the pressure on you to do it either, or even put it in your mind, I guess.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say congratulations.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
So you're now certified.
Thank you so much. I am now good to go, yeah. So watch out, London Town. Hopefully it means like a sort of healthier, balanced lifestyle on a personal level, but I'm going to start trying to teach community classes as anywhere I can, basically. You know,
right.
Free hall for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And, like, the amazing thing about this course is that it's 200 hours, which seems like a lot. It is a lot, but it kind of just sort of opens the door,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you realize how much there is to really learn, like how complex the human body is, and actually how big the scope of yoga is itself.
Yeah.
Because it's not just postures and what's called asana, which are the poses. That's over here, that's actually viewed as a preparatory practice for going deeper into meditation and eventually attaining samadhi. They call samadhi, which is self-actualization or enlightenment or connection with the superconsciousness. So really, the postures and challenging physical stuff is just a way of kind of getting out of your head, getting out of that sort of incessant brain chatter, and, you know, clearing that all out so that you can, you know, become one with the superconscious.
Yeah.
so that's a long journey to go on. If I choose to accept it, you know.
So what has your routine been like?
The routine, okay. I can take you through it.
Okay.
The alarm goes off at about 6.
Right.
6 in the morning. Get up, say hello to the other people. Occasionally say hello to the one-eyed monkey that would terrorize our balcony and steal our food. If we left the door open, he would come in and steal our bread. It was really...
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, they're everywhere. So yeah, prep, and then we would start our first class at 7, which would be a 2-hour hatha class. So hatha is like the longer hold postures, sort of either strength building or sort of gentler, more restorative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Get the day started right. Then we would have breakfast, and we would have philosophy class, which covered everything from like yoga history to the sort of the concepts behind, like there's so many concepts in sacred texts, and we've sort of gotten intro to them. I wouldn't say I'm an expert in any of those things at the moment. And then we would do a really cool class called Posture and Alignment, and it was just sort of looking at the human body in a really ergonomic way. So how to sort of correct imbalances that, some common imbalances that people have, and how to do that in the context of a yoga class. Then we would have lunch time. Then we would do anatomy and physiology. So it's like the systems of the body, muscles, skeleton, all that good stuff. Then we would have our flow class, Vinyasa class. So like the same thing in the morning, but a little bit more intense, a little bit more cardio to it.
Yeah.
And then we'd have an hour of meditation to close it all up.
Wow. Your brain must be fried.
I feel kind of invigorated, though. I think once you kind of tap into, like, this is my life, this is the routine, and you kind of get over the initial, like, oh my god, this is a long day.
Yeah.
Because everything was so stimulating and so new, I don't think it was much of an issue, really.
You're making me want to do it.
Oh, man. I'd actually recommend it to anybody who's just interested in yoga, because you don't have to go on to teach. A lot of people come just sort of...
Just for the experience.
They're like... Yeah, or just get out of your day-to-day and shake things up a little bit.
Yeah.
That's so important.
Yeah, I agree. Do you feel through yoga practice that you've been able to connect deeply with your mind and body? Obviously you have, but do you feel confirmed by the connections made in your choice to be vegan any more than you did before? Like, did it connect anything with you mentally?
Said that it was kind of like a switch going off, and it just felt like right in that moment, and that was it, you know, for me.
Yeah.
But I think this has actually given more, like, I feel more inhabited in that choice, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because before it was quite like, it's emotional, it's raw, it's spontaneous, it feels good. But here, like, you talk about concepts and you know, I mentioned Ahimsa before, which is nonviolence. It's one of the yamas, which is part of the eight limbs of yoga, and it's one of the first things that's mentioned is nonviolence towards all living creatures.
Wow.
It's very clear that doing nonviolence is equivalent to this vegan lifestyle.
Yeah.
And also, I was looking into some, we didn't actually study the Veda, but it's a sacred text in yoga. There's one little section that I sort of highlighted out here. Basically, they take their animal care very seriously. And there's a little paragraph here that's a little bit extreme for, you know, maybe for a Friday afternoon. They that trouble others for the sake of their own good are rakshas, which means monsters.
Mm.
And they that eat the flesh of birds and beasts are pishaks, or devils. Which is like, you know, that's pretty black and white as well.
Yeah.
And it goes to the point of even in marriage, a husband, you know, when you're making the vows and everything,
yeah,
a husband should solemnly ask his wife to, and this is quotes, be kind to animals and try to protect happiness of all bipeds and quadrupeds.
I love that.
Like that's part of your marriage vows.
Yeah, I think me and Sam should put those in.
Yeah, it's kind of nice because it takes on sort of not just happiness for you and the other person, but the acknowledgement that you exist in a sort of a greater system. And if you're making a union with one person, you're actually also making a union within this the environment within which you live.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful thing.
It really
it's
is.
Building a life together, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We obviously know that there are many ways to be and not to be healthy. And we've both experienced non-vegans where they are quick to point out what we might be lacking in our diets. But has it been difficult eating healthy as a vegan in India with dairy alternatives and vegan delicacies like tofu not being easily available in most areas?
And actually, I can talk a little bit about Ayurveda. It's a whole, like, health system that is meant to sort of promote a happy body and a happy mind as well, and it really looks at the union between those two things. And so all of our cooking by the lovely Kamal, who is our chef at the hotel there, he made dishes that were Ayurvedic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a complicated process, but they classify human bodies into types based on predominant elements. So you can get these sort of readings. I haven't actually gotten one myself, but the dosha reading uses your pulse, among other things.
Mm.
And so you have dominant doshas within your body. So there's vata, which is air and space, pitta, which is fire and water, and kapha, which is water and earth.
Mm.
And we all have some combination of these things sort of at play in our bodies at any given time. And they are set at the moment of conception. But then your current state of health is sort of reflected by your life choices, your diet, your lifestyle, emotions, age, environment, blah, blah, blah. That can sometimes put you off center. And so the goal of Ayurvedic cooking is to kind of get you back to your basics, get you back to your sort of core level. And eating is a big way of going about that. So an Ayurvedic diet is often prescribed over here as a means to sort of bridge the gap between that sort of innate state, like your doses that you've been assigned at birth,
yeah,
and then your current state, which may have been off but due to anything else. And so the goal is to restore balance and bring the body back to neutral. And one thing that I love here, and that really sort of gets my mind worrying, is that there's a really strong belief that food is medicine, even for the spirit. And so I think it's actually kind of the opposite, to circle back to your question there. It's almost the opposite, is that I think there's a really deep connection with, like, food, and what you put in your body is actually being what you get out of it.
Yeah.
I felt that really firsthand. It's like, you know, putting good things into your body, you get such amazing results in terms of energy and outlook. And just, yeah, all that.
It's so good to hear.
Yeah,
and
it makes such sense to me. It makes such logical sense, and yet I think it's so easily obscured in sort of big city life. It's just a little switch again that you have to flick in your brain, and all of a sudden you go, oh yeah, that makes logical sense.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here with a menu on my lap. I just look at menus because they're so amazing here. But I can just read out some things that they have.
Yeah.
It's amazing. First of all, they have loads of loads of tofu and all that kind of stuff.
So oh, they do?
Strict protein stuff.
That's really interesting, because I read online that they're that they don't really have tofu out there, but obviously they do.
Yeah, I think pretty much every restaurant I've been to has had some kind of tofu-y type thing.
All right.
Yeah, like they have a yogi breakfast.
What's that?
Which has like spinach, green apple, cucumber, fresh lemon juice with soya tea, Nescafe, scrambled tofu, sliced avocado, green salad, brown bread.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I want that now.
Yeah, like I think if any restaurant had these types of like menus here, you would like, you just lose your mind. Just like veggies for days. And all of this is like probably for about like £2.50 is the most expensive dish that you'll have on this menu right now.
It sounds like you're in heaven.
Yeah, I don't really know why I'm coming back, but I'm back. It's to see my lovely friends.
Oh, but it really does, what you were saying just now really does connect with me, because taking your advice, I've been reading How Not to Die.
Yeah.
It's been really making me think more about what we put in our bodies, like, is like a medicine, and that we should see it like that, not just stuffing our face with whatever we want, you know?
Yeah, as I say, it makes such logical sense, but I think in practice, in terms of, like, we prioritise, I think, convenience more than actual health. Often.
Yeah, that's true. Have you noticed a huge difference in the cost of fruit and veg out there?
I haven't actually been to a supermarket per se.
Right.
There's a big one apparently just outside. There's loads of little stalls and things. Effectively, I have been spending so much less on food than I would back at home.
Do you think that's because you've been provided by the course as well? Or do you think it would have been different if you hadn't been?
I still think I would probably be spending a bit less, because even like if I were to spend maybe like a couple quid per meal eating three meals out a day, which isn't necessary with these places because the portions are giant.
Wow.
You know, I'd probably still be spending only like £5 to £7 a day on food and stuff. Which if you think about, like, that's like if you go get like a spiky coffee and a cake somewhere, that's easily that amount.
Yeah.
You spend any money on food, let alone transportation and all the other stuff. So, yeah, I think part of it must be. And the cool thing that I noticed here is that it's very seasonal as well.
Which is great, which is so good for you.
Yeah, they only stock things that, like, they have to, like, they're left for something the other day. Like, oh, mango, yeah. Like, we don't do mango this time of year. And it's because it's not in season. And that makes so much sense again to me. I think we're so used to getting everything we want, whenever we want.
Yeah. You must be questioning everything about the way we live.
To some extent, but it's easy to get really sort of like dismayed about the state of the world, like other people not being into the realities of how we get our food.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still like outraged by it, and I still see it, and you know, I'm fired up probably more than ever. I think personally it doesn't take as much of a toll, which is really healthy.
Do you think it would be possible to live the lifestyle food wise in this country the way they do in India? Do you think we'd ever be able to do that, or do you think we've just gone too far?
I'm an optimist personally. Like, I think a lot of things would have to change first of all, and I think a big thing is just the pace of life, the lifestyle. We pay for convenience, and we pay for getting things when we want them. And I think the way we pay with that is obviously for, you know, higher costs money-wise, but also we pay for it with our health.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's sustainable. So I think that, like, sort of the work-life balance kind of has to change. Yeah, so I'm going to try and integrate a little bit more, just in terms of, like, being just more conscious about where my money's going.
Yeah.
Because that is speaking, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, definitely. You did speak about this in episode one, but did you learn any more about Ahisma?
Ahimsa.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Are there people who encourage veganism at all within that? Or is it nothing to do with that?
You know, I was talking to my teachers about it, and they don't as much view sort of like, in terms of the dairy stuff, to be a violation in any respect. And I was kind of looking into this a little bit more as to why the cows are sacred and the kind of hypocrisy therein.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of people online who kind of have called that out and said, you know, but like we're literally taking something away. but then other people have brought up on a few occasions that the cow, the reason for the cow's greater significance is actually because of its byproducts and because, you know, it's given these wonderful gifts to man. And I think initially, in the initial stages of, like, or the earlier days before things became quite industrialized,
yeah.
What I heard was that they would feed the calf and consume only what, if any, was left over. So it wasn't, you know, there wasn't sort of like dairy farm kind of model that we've got now. Obviously, that's all no longer the case, and, you know, dairy farm here is very much a thing. So I just think it's just a different sort of viewpoint of things. I think the other yogis here are very much up on that and aware of it, but I think tradition also speaks quite loudly as well. And if,
yeah.
you know, these products are traditionally seen as healthful and part of a balanced diet, it is hard to change people's minds on that, especially if they really don't see the, you know, cruelty inherent in acquiring these products.
Do you feel like, do you think the disconnection with where milk comes from and how obviously we get the milk, do you think the disconnection is as high there as it is here? Or do you think people know? Are they more educated in regards to cows?
I think it's really hard to say.
Yeah.
It so depends on the individual. And I haven't been able to get as much of a straight answer out of people as I would have liked, probably, for this. I think there are places and people that are always going to be about the bottom line. And this is only my perception. There's a bit of an issue, I think, that sometimes comes in with other religions as well. But the idea that man and consciousness of man or woman, humans, let's say, is elevated above the animals. And there are those that posit, again, that the reason cows are sacred is because of what they can do, what gifts they can bestow upon us, and because we are higher up on the food chain. And that's a sort of line of thinking that I find really troubling.
Yeah, me too.
And no one said it explicitly, to be fair, in the training. But it's just the way that, you know, you talked about, like, achieving kind of the connection with the superconscious in the way that, like, animals can't or don't. Or maybe they have done it, we just can't communicate with them about it, who knows. I think there's a tendency in all religions to kind of elevate humans above animals, and that their sacredness is only dependent on what they can give to us. You know, I've only been here for a month, to be fair.
Sure.
So I can't comment on, you know, the greater religious aspects as a whole, but it's unfortunate that we like to put ourselves above everything else.
Yeah.
You know, man's kingdom, and the animals are all here for our own.
For us.
Personal gain.
Yeah. I did see that you had a picture with one of the sacred cows. Do the cows there differ at all to the cows we are used to here in the UK or used to seeing on the TV?
In that they are everywhere. they hang out like on like the busiest roads you could imagine, and all like the, you know, the carts are honking and the tuk-tuks are honking and the people are like, and then the cows just chilling, lying down on the pavement.
Yeah.
Very funny.
But like the picture that you sent,
they look a bit different.
Yeah.
Like they've got like a little hump, a little camel hump for the cows.
Yeah, they seem a lot skinnier than the cows here, and I wonder why that is.
There's no one explicitly charged with taking care of them, which is funny. So they just roam. When on the cab over, one of our girls asked the cab driver, like, so who owns these cows? And they go, nobody owns the cows. Like, what a silly question, you know? Nobody owns the cows.
Wow.
So they kind of fend for themselves, and I guess. In some ways, they are dependent on, like, the kindness of people, which can, you know, be amazing and also kind of backfire in some respects
right.
as well. Like, when I was looking at the side effects of the dairy industry over here, some farmers are said to donate, quote-unquote, surplus bull calves to temples by tying them to temple fences and sometimes allowing them just to sort of, like, wither away from dehydration there. Because, as we know, sort of the bulls aren't... as useful to our dairy industry. So they just kind of, and because no one is explicitly killing them, it's seen as sort of like, oh, it's no one's fault necessarily, which, you know, it's kind of like finding the loopholes in your perceived morality.
Yeah.
But I think there I've seen like troughs and things with water and stuff and feed. We might also just not be used to seeing cows that are not being fatted.
Yeah.
Artificially.
Yeah.
Also a potential.
says a lot, doesn't it? And it makes you question, like, what is a normal cow meant to look like without any human interference? You know, because we think, oh, a cow is meant to look the way we know it to be, but maybe that's not the case.
Totally.
You know, it's a really interesting thing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's such a sort of dangerous trail to go down, because you think about, like, how we specially sort of design the breeds.
Yeah.
Purpose sort of built cows either for milk or for meat. You know, we've gone so far down sort of Frankenstein route that I think it'd be hard to actually know what
yeah.
a quote-unquote natural cow would be now.
Oh, it's quite overwhelming, isn't it, to think about what we've done.
It's one of the many words for it. I think it's going to be an interesting job trying to integrate all this.
Talking of animals, have you seen much of the elephant riding industry?
I really haven't, and I'm kind of glad for that. It
doesn't yeah.
seem to be super rife where I've... They pointed to, like, we're kind of surrounded by the foothills of the Himalayas, which sounds super classy. And it actually is, it's quite cool. So you look up around you and there's just these sort of mounds of green that go vertically up into the sky. It's very nice.
Mm. Sounds lovely.
There's elephants in that direction, and I'm not sure if they're for riding purposes or if they're just wandering through. I'm hoping they're just wandering through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've actually been seeing more things about it just on sort of like Facebook and Instagram, and going, oh yeah, that's a thing. Unfortunately, I haven't seen much of it.
That's good. That's good. It'd be interesting to see if you can speak to anyone while you're there about it, see what the locals know in regards to it and what they think about it, I guess.
Yeah, I'll have to try and get some last-minute combos in.
Yeah. Does it feel like the second most populated place? Could you live there? I think I know the answer to that, but do you think you could live there?
In Rishikesh, I think I could, at least for a little while longer. It's like, it feels quite untemporary and quite rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Impermanent, temporary.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rough around the edges. It's very raw. But I think I could be here for a while still.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. It attracts a really cool kind of traveler as well. People that, you know, from all over. We were just chilling up in the hostel last night, everyone having a sort of shared meal, which again is vegan. Amazing. Yeah, just great people's stories. People that, like, you know, one of the guys is an aerospace engineer and, you know, an attempted performer living in London and, you know, graphic designers. People just from every corner of the world just sat up here having chats about life. Quite cool, quite humbling. I'm like, when do we get to do this?
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing experience. You're really selling it.
I know, they're paying me.
Have you missed anything being there?
Oh, good question. Have I missed anything? I've missed the people, to be honest. Oh. It's mainly the people that I miss. I think I would miss sort of like the, you know, the art in London and the culture. And it always is an exciting place to come back to just because of the energy of the place. But it's a very different kind of energy, and I think it's cool to, as I said numerous times already, to get out and have a breath of fresh air.
Literally.
Literally.
Okay, lastly, before I pack my bags and get on a plane and come over there.
You're not the first person who said that.
What has been your favourite meal in India?
I can't narrow it down to one. So, big ups to our lovely Kamal once again, who made things according to all of our personal tastes and
wow.
made them freaking delicious every time. So he made this pulled tofu thing. I don't know how to describe it. It was it looked like pulled pork. It was turmeric yellow, and the spices were just insane. And every time that was served, there was literally nothing left of it. So that was a huge one. We ended up having these amazing vegan burgers with vegan cashew cheese at this place called the Beatles Cafe. And it was another one of these lovely spots overlooking Ganges. I'm not sure if you're aware, but like the Beatles came here to an ashram in 1968, I believe. There's a photo of it up on our Instagram with the All You Need Is Love thing. I'll post some more as well.
Cool.
But yeah, it was a beautiful ashram, and they went there, and after that they came back and that released the White Album, largely with songs that they had written or collaborated on at their time doing transcendental meditation up which is quite cool. And last night I also had a vegan raw cashew cheesecake.
What?
In place, and it was special order, so they made it for us. And we came back and just, it was these giant slabs of raw vegan cheesecake. And yeah, things that you never expect to have halfway across the world. Pure indulgence.
Lindsay, bring back the recipe for the cheesecake. I miss cheesecake.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's like, I could write a book now. All Began with Friends cookbook. Stay tuned, people.
I was going to say, you could call it All Began in India.
It all began in India. Just me doing yoga poses. Eating at the same time.
I love that idea. You should so do it.
I can't believe how much can change in a month. So I think like that's the cool thing to end up on is like you think like, oh, I'm sort of in my day to day, I'm in the grind. It's like everything can change.
Yeah.
In a moment, in an instant, and you can really just like in one month, that's so much time to change, to form new habits.
Yeah.
You know, to not to get too cheesy here, sorry vegans, but like to start becoming the person that you actually want to be.
Yeah.
I think it's just sort of an invaluable lesson.
It sounds like you would recommend anyone to go out there and just do it.
Literally anyone, even if you don't like yoga. There's yeah. something you'll find that you'll enjoy or get from this.
So what are your plans for the rest of the day?
It's my final night here. I'm going to have dinner at one of our favorite restaurants. I'm going to go to a fire ceremony, which I don't really know what it entails, but it's on the Ganges. Mm. I think it's blessings to the Ma Gange, the Holy Ganges River, lighting the fire and saying some prayers. And then I'm going to go get my ear pierced.
Ooh.
With two of the girls who are here that did the course with me. And then we're going to do some live music tonight as a little send-off. I eventually somewhere in there have to pack a bag, which has exploded all over my hostel safe. but I'm sure that'll be figured out.
That's the last of the priorities, right? You're going to have a lovely evening.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be emotional, right?
It's already starting. The whole thing has been so surreal, and obviously leaving's becoming surreal as well.
So when will I see you? Monday?
I'm going to Scotland for a few days. Not sure to mention that.
Oh, are you?
It's harder to be vegan in Scotland than it.
Surprisingly, you're probably right. Yeah. It probably will be.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine it's harder in London to be vegan than it is in India by the sounds of it.
At least where I've been.
It sounds like you have such a lovely evening planned.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it's nice to hear your voice, my friend.
And you.
On the home side. Thank you for chatting, love.
Oh, thank you for taking the time out.
Anytime.
Enjoy the rest of your time and have a safe journey back.
Thank you. I cannot wait to see you.
You too.
And the rest of the team, of course. I will see you soon.
Love you. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy your life.
Enjoy yours.
Thank you, listeners, for joining me to listen to Lindsay's vegan travels. We hope you enjoyed our catch-up too. Keep an eye open for more episodes coming very soon, where we will be talking about food for thought. Whilst trying meals from the company All Plants, we will ask, what more do we need from food chains to grow as a vegan society? We also will be trying some mulled cider by Crane's Drinks and sharing with you alternatives of vegan drinks and snacks to get you in the Xmas spirit just in time for Christmas. Stay tuned to our post by following us on Instagram, @itallbeganwithfriends, and our Twitter account, @allveganfriends. And if you want to share any products that you recommend for Christmas, or you have a question for Lindsay about her journey in India, please drop us an email at itallbeganwithfriends@hotmail.com. Thank you again for joining us today with It All Began With Friends, and we look forward to the next time. Bye!